Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ralph Nader is with us this hour. Ralph has a new book, and it is titled Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. He says this book is about the virulent misbehavior of big business and the pursuit of grotesque profits, actions of the corporate outlaws documented by mainstream media and well-regarded specialized publications. And Ralph writes, even when these greedy, overreaching bullies are sometimes caught, the punishment is usually too little and too late. He, of course, has a long career as a consumer advocate. It's quite impressive to read the number of organizations that he founded: the Center for Study of Responsive Law, the Public Interest Research Group, the Center for Auto Safety, Public Citizen, Clean Water Action Project, the Disability Rights Center, the Pension Rights Center, the Project for Corporate Responsibility, and the Multinational Monitor, which is a monthly magazine. The book is dedicated to all Americans who get steamed enough to join together in action, as urged in the aftermath of his book. We have a lot to talk about this hour with Ralph Nader, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. I'm sure there will be many. Here is the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Ralph Nader.
Good morning, Kathleen.
I haven't talked to you in a long time. Nice to have you on the air again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's start with health insurance, because you start the book with the uninsured and the number of people, which is absolutely sinful, who die in this country because they don't have health insurance, and they're still not going to have it until 2014.
Yeah, just in listening to what we discussed this hour, I hope that your listeners will think of the context of the Republican and Democratic political campaigns and how they avoid talking about the grim realities that are affecting people in our country as workers, consumers, patients, communities, small taxpayers, because of the power of the corporate supremacists over our government, over almost anything they seek control of in this country. And we should also, listening to all this, take note that a great majority of the American people, in poll after poll, say that big corporations have too much control over their lives. So we're talking about liberals and conservatives, people who pigeonhole themselves politically, agreeing that a democratic society is incompatible with such concentration in the hands of the big oil companies, the big drug companies, the big mineral companies, the big banks, the big insurance companies. And that gets to the point you just raised, and that is the first case in this book deals with a peer-reviewed study by Harvard Medical School researchers that have a careful estimate of 800 Americans every week dying because they cannot afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated. And if 800 Americans are dying every week in a preventable mode, you can imagine how many other Americans are sick and injured because they can't afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated. Now, you'd think 800 Americans a week on the average would be a major political issue for the two candidates. Not at all. For the two parties, not at all. Never mentioned. And the same holds true for 58,000 Americans who die every year from workplace-related diseases and trauma, according to OSHA in Washington. That's over 1,000 a week. Or the 100,000 Americans who die every year due to medical negligence just in hospitals, not including emergency rooms, according to researchers at the Harvard School of Public Health. That's 2,000 a week. And to make it even worse, EPA estimates 65,000 Americans die every year, over 1,000 a week, from air pollution, especially from the burning of coal. And that's often a horrible, asphyxiating fatality. So here we have close to 300,000 Americans who die every year from preventable causes. And it isn't even a political issue. Not to mention the hundreds of thousands more who are sick and injured from the same preventable causes. That's why we as people have to take matters in our own hands, politically, economically, and recover the sovereignty of the people as espoused in our Constitution, which we must also remember starts with we the people, not we the corporations.
Please fill us in again. You write on healthcare again about 4 years before other parts that will cover more people of this healthcare plan go into effect. It's still a long time to give a lot of the health insurance attorneys time to learn how to game and circumvent restrictions on their greed. You spend some time in the book talking about the number of lobbyists who give huge amounts of money in campaign contributions, and it's not just health insurance people, it's people on Wall Street, it's pharmaceutical companies, et cetera. Is all of this growing, or as a result of our bailout of Wall Street, have a lot of people said enough and the lobbyists are starting to go home?
Just the reverse, Kathleen. And that's when you know that our political system is in decay. The worse the corporations perform, like the crooks and gamblers on Wall Street crashing the securities industry on top of the economy, unemploying 8 million workers, throwing the country in a deep recession, and then having the brazen gall to go to Washington for a multi-trillion dollar taxpayer bailout. They have more power now over Washington and over the Congress than ever. And usually a recovering society is one that says to the culprits, to the wrongdoers, to the violators, you are going to pay the penalty, you are going to do the time, and you're not going to have as much influence anymore because you have betrayed the trust of the American people. No, it's just the opposite. And that's when you know that our system is in a downward spiral in terms of injustice. And that's why this book that I wrote called Steamed, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism, is an action book. It's not just an exposure book. It just summarizes a couple hundred reports from mainstream media on corporate misbehavior and corporate domination, and then says, okay, you've now spent 3 or 4 hours reading through this book. Are you ready for the action plan? And the aftermath of this book, and the book is short, about 200 pages, the aftermath lays out the way people can organize up to 2,000 people in every congressional district. And if they're steamed enough to volunteer 100 hours and volunteer a raise, $100, and connect with each other in one congressional district after another, they can transform Congress in a way that holds these companies accountable over the long run, not just increase enforcement budgets for prosecution and law and order against these corporate violators, but to shift the kind of power in a very easy way to make it easy for taxpayers, consumers, workers, communities to band together and develop a more of a balance in our political and economic system.
And it seems as though people are calling for that. We certainly have an Occupy movement that wasn't in existence a year ago or a year and a half ago.
Yes.
Yeah. This fundamental unfairness, let's talk a bit more about this. You talk about how workers, this isn't something that's been a short-term thing. Workers have been sacrificing for years. You write the average worker paychecks are worth much less now than in 1973, but CEOs and other rich Americans not only make much more, they pay less in taxes. I mean, this isn't a partisan issue. It's an issue of fairness, isn't it?
That's right. And that's why you're seeing the liberal-conservative convergence in this country by people who are saying, look, we may have some disagreements here and there, but there's such a thing as fair play. There's such a thing as the secular version of the golden rule. And when you look at the way people are treated, imagine the economy in the GDP has doubled since 1973, almost doubled in inflation-adjusted terms. It has doubled in worker productivity since 1968. And yet the federal minimum wage of $7.25 is less in purchasing power, adjusted for inflation, than it was in 1973, 1968. It would be almost $10 now, just about $10 minimum wage. So you have millions of workers who are making less than $10 an hour before deductions in this country, Walmart wages, who don't have the purchasing power of a minimum wage worker back in 1968, even though productivity per worker has doubled. Now, that is a clear, overwhelmingly evidential sign of the decline of working people's livelihoods in this country. And you think that would be a major issue in the presidential campaign, but it isn't. Take drug prices. The corporate drug companies made sure in their influence in Congress when the drug benefit law was passed for elderly, they prohibited Uncle Sam, who's paying the bill on behalf of you, the taxpayers, to engage in volume discount bargaining with the drug companies to reduce the price, even though the Defense Department and the Veterans Administration have years ago had that kind of power. So the idea is, if people are exposed to these abuses in this book, as they're reported by New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, mainstream press, will they get steamed enough so 2,000 of them in each congressional district can organize? One thing we've got to realize in this country, it's a lot easier to turn around our government than we think it is, even with the corporations on the government's back and putting their people in government high positions. It's much easier. But we grow up thinking we have no power, can't fight City Hall, can't take on ExxonMobil, have to get along by going along. We don't learn civic practice. We don't learn how to be effective citizens in schools and in our colleges. We learn computer science and design, but not civic advocacy. And so it's not surprising that people are discouraged, they're cynical, half of them don't vote. It's pox on all your houses. But you see, that just plays in the hands of the rascals who fill the vacuum of power with special commercial interests.
We welcome phone calls for Ralph Nader as we continue talking about the rascals and his call to action at the end of the book, in which he asks for 1 million Americans getting together for collective action, well distributed geographically in all 435 congressional districts through 50 states, and they raise or contribute $100 a year. They dedicate 100 volunteer hours to push our senators and representatives to deal with corporate crime. And his new book outlines corporate crime, the extent of corporate crime in this country. Getting steamed to overcome corporatism, build it together to win. Our phone lines are jammed. Eventually, there will be some openings. The number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your phone calls for Ralph Nader, let's start with Chris in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Mr. Nader, I'm so proud to be able to talk to you. May I first say that you are one of the few politicians I've been actually proud to vote for. What I called to say is that I'm thinking that an unexpected consequence of the Supreme Court decision to allow unlimited money into these political races, that it would be the Republicans who would be the first to fall from the competing super-rich interests. I wasn't expecting that, were you?
No, I think there is a movement around the country to try to amend the Constitution and overturn Citizens United, which, of course, allows all these super PACs to get secret contributions in unlimited amounts, tens of millions of dollars now in one super PAC after another, to influence the election and to put ads on TV that are often very distorted. But there are three things that can be done in Congress short of a constitutional amendment, which you know is very difficult to get through. One is to support the Disclose Act, which is as its name implies, would require the secret contributors' names to be disclosed and put online periodically. And the second is to simply say that any corporation that does business with the U.S. government, contracts, grants, leaseholds, you name it, cannot avail itself of unlimited money by Citizens United. And the third approach would be to require an affirmative disclosure immediately by the Federal Elections Commission. So we don't have to wait until after the New Hampshire primary to see who poured money into the New Hampshire primary.
Thank you so much, Chris, for your call. Rick in Prentice. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, Mr. Nader. I've got a cell phone here that's a little quirky, so I may have to holler a little bit. I got two basic points to make. My first point is that my understanding is that you yourself personally went to visit the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus between the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s to meet with a bunch of your progressive intellectual friends there, and that you gave permission, basically, to the operatives of the Clinton administration to engage in all this deregulation, deregulation of banking, deregulation of investment banking, deregulation of hedge funds, deregulation of the commodity markets, deregulation of the mortgage industry. That's the report I have heard. I don't know if that's true or not. But my second point, the reason this is important to me, is that, my bank, because I had a dispute with them over them taking my savings account, they take the local sheriff's department on me, burglarized my house, stole everything I owned, and murdered my family. And I haven't been able to do anything about this because I couldn't find an attorney that would represent me without a large cash deposit.
All right, let's talk about the second thing might be too complicated here, the deregulation.
They broke up a little on the phone, yeah. Kathleen, but so, as far as I can understand, no, we're against all this breakdown of law and order, whether it deals with hedge funds or drug companies or financial institutions. It's just the reverse. We believe that if there's got to be law and order on street crime, there's got to be law and order on corporate crime, because in many ways, corporate criminal negligence takes far more money and injures and sickens far more people than street crime, bad as the latter is. And we've got to focus on corporate crime and their immunity from being prosecuted. You remember on the awards, the holiday awards, the Academy Awards, the winning documentary went up to get the prize, and he said, not one Wall Streeter has been prosecuted and sent to jail.
Yes, right. Let's talk. I don't know whatever happened with this, if Bernie Sanders is still on this case or not. I found this interesting. Senator Bernie Sanders proposed a law a couple of years ago that would cap consumer loan rates at 15%. Banks are getting money from the Federal Reserve at near 0% interest rates, but they turn around and charge Americans 20-30% and as high as 41%, more than double what they paid in interest in 1990.
Never in American history has the gap been so great in the profit. It's just absolutely amazing that these banks can get money from the loans and from the Federal Reserve for virtually zero interest and turn around. And some of this filters down to payday loan companies in the inner city.
Right.
Where people on the rollovers are paying up to 400% interest. You mentioned what Bernie Sanders is doing. He's basically trying to establish a federal usury law. The ban on usury, usurious interest, goes back to biblical days. And there used to be state laws up until the 1970s, which says you can't charge 15, 20, 30%, no matter what. And the financial companies repealed these state laws, and then it was Katie bar the door. And so you'll get some unpaid credit card balances being assessed at 29-30% interest. In fact, the credit card companies make their money on people not being able to pay on time. And that's why in hard times where people can't pay on time, the stock for MasterCard and Visa are zooming upward. See, it's that perverse incentive. It's that divergence between rising corporate profits and more and more worker unemployment that indicates that the country is really going on the wrong path.
And how much money? I keep wondering who's sitting on all this money. I hear that over $1 trillion, corporations who really have been quite profitable in the last couple of years are sitting on a lot of money because they're worried about the future. They're worried about regulations, government regulations. Mm-hmm. How much money is being sat on?
Well, first of all, that money belongs to the shareholders. It belongs to the pension funds. It belongs to the mutual fund investors. It belongs to the people out there. And I've been fighting Cisco as a shareholder of Cisco. I've been going after management because that's an example of what you're alluding to. Cisco is sitting on $45 billion, with a B, dollars of cash, liquid assets. And they have this paltry, recently instituted dividend of 6 cents a quarter, and I've said you should have a special dividend of a dollar to your long-suffering shareholders who've stuck with you year after year and watched their stock values go from $82 in 2000 to $18 today, even though your company's reported growing sales and profits and expansion every year. So the management, which pays itself very well, Chairman John Chambers, are not paying attention to shareholder value. And so if the companies were required to give out higher dividends, there'd be more consumer money to increase consumer demand, which is highly needed in a recession that we're in now. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm asking President Obama, that when he speaks out from his bully pulpit, he ought to say to companies like Apple, Microsoft, Intel, Oracle, Cisco, and other corporations who are sitting on literally hundreds of billions of dollars of shareholders' money, to give out a couple hundred billion dollars in dividends as a patriotic move, if nothing else, to stimulate the economy.
Oh, that's a good way to describe it. As a patriotic move, why don't you do this? Aren't you patriots?
Yes. I mean, these companies were born in the USA. They rose to profit on the backs of American workers. They went to Washington for bailouts on the backs of American taxpayers when they got in trouble, or they get it all the time in terms of corporate welfare. And if there are trouble overseas, they often are rescued by the U.S. Marines historically. And they are not paying back in a patriotic temperament, a patriotic behavior and demonstration to the country that fostered them and protected them. And in effect, they're doing the opposite. They're saying, we're out of here with your jobs and industry to fascist and communist regimes overseas who know how to keep their workers in their place with no unions and 80 cents an hour pay.
I think you're getting the audience steamed, Ralph.
Well, it's important. And when I say steamed, I don't mean wild anger. I mean informed indignation, the kind that animated Rosa Parks to spark the civil rights movement in the 50s, the kind that animated the workers who did the sit-down strike against General Motors and Ford to forge the United Auto Workers back in the 1930s, putting their entire livelihoods on the line. There was no unemployment compensation, no food stamps at that time. All over our country's history, the things we liked that we inherited came from just a few people who had fire in their belly, who got steamed and represented the values of much larger numbers of people who happened to remain passive. That's the battle against slavery, women's right to vote, the struggle for farmers' rights and workers' fair play. And that's what we're trying to recreate with this book, Getting Steamed. You can get more information on this whole agenda by visiting CSRL.org. That's CSRL.org.
CSRL.org. Okay.
Yes.
Josie in Sheboygan, hi.
Oh, good morning. I just can't believe this. I've admired you for years and years. I agree with every single word you say. I'm 66 years old, and I've just been watching. I'm a poor person. And I understand, oh my goodness, I don't know, I'm so flustered, but I admire you so much. You're one of my precious few heroes. The two things, I wish I was more eloquent, but the two things that I would say there's total corruption in this country. We have no more moral authority for any other country. And also, I believe that the corporations that are doing this, I've been talking about it to people. I don't know if the people I've seen around, they just don't understand, you know, what I'm talking about. They don't care. They don't listen to the news. But I regard what the corporations are doing is treasonous.
Why? Well, you know, that's why I wrote this book, because these 200 corporate outrages are taken from places like Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Washington Post, Corporate Crime Reporter, Health Newsletter, very reputable sources, and they're easy to read because they average about one page, and it really tests the reader as to whether they're going to just wring their hands in despair and withdraw, or whether they're going to say, look, the best things in American history always start with a few people. And a few people can make a heck of a difference. And now we have the Internet. We have radio, TV. I mean, think of our forebears who had nothing but muddy roads and horse wagons. They didn't even have electricity and the farmer populist revolt over 125 years ago. They didn't even have any transportation, so to speak. They just went farmhouse to farmhouse and started the major progressive populist reform movement in American history. And I think the more we realize that, the more we can be ashamed of ourselves if we just give up. And that's why I like about the Occupy movement, Kathleen. It's people who said, we're not giving up. We've had enough. We're going to stay 24 hours in these public parks, and we're going to raise the issue of massive equality, massive control of power by the few against the many, which is the antithesis of any humane society, and the disrespect of working people and consumers and taxpayers who pay all the bills. I mean, we're not talking in this book about small business. Small business is one of the last refuges of free market capitalism. It's these giant global corporations that float around the globe, pitting one government against another, pushing for wartime contracts. They have no moral compass, with a few exceptions. They have no moral compass in maximizing their advantage to deny health care claims, to gouge people with drug prices, to avoid paying taxes. Verizon has paid no taxes on billions of income in the last 3 years. Honeywell has paid no taxes in 2009, 2010, even though they generated a lot of profits. General Electric has paid virtually no taxes in 10 years, and they've gotten billions of dollars of benefits back from the U.S. Treasury. So perverse is the corporate tax system. Well, you know, that you don't have to be a liberal conservative. You can be just a human being who said, that's just not fair. That's just not right. And we've got the muscle among the people to turn this around, because if we turn Congress around, and Congress is the easiest institution because it's 535 men and women who put their shoes on every day like we do, and they have to be elected. There are 1,500 corporations in Washington with their lobbyists who get their way with a majority of these 535 senators and representatives. But they don't have a single vote, these companies. We're the ones who have the vote, but we've got to organize it in a laser-type fashion with all the evidence and all the moral principles that we can gather. And that's why I really would like anybody interested just to visit CSRL.org for more details.
Thank you, Josie, for the call. Ron wants to talk more about the military. Ron from Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
I'm just like Josie, 66 years old, and an admirer of your work in the world. It's truly noble and heroic. And you all answered most of my questions about globalization, but I wanted to you to speak more about how globalization is actually motivating the use of the United States as a profit center for certain international investors, particularly you mentioned war profiteers, who benefit using our military to fight their battles of empire spreading and how they use the United States as a profit center, taking our treasury, any money they can get.
Well, that goes back to Marine General Smedley Butler in the first three decades of the 20th century. He got a double Congressional Medal of Honor, the only Marine general ever to do that. He wrote a book at the end of his career called War is a Racket, and how he was a racketeer for American corporations in Cuba, in Mexico, in Central America, in China, and elsewhere. And indeed, it was Ted Koppel who wrote an op-ed in the New York Times. Remember ABC Ted Koppel, who said a main motivation for invading Iraq, it wasn't weapons of mass destruction. They didn't exist. And the UN inspectors were documenting that before Bush and Cheney cut them off and plunged our country into that horrible war with over a million Iraqis losing their lives, blowing the country apart, and blowing a lot of American families apart with soldiers dying and sick coming back. It was about oil. And this war drumbeats toward Iran, that has everything to do with oil. Iran is the last opponent of the U.S. To stand up to the U.S., and once that crumbles, then they can control all Saudi oil and Iraq oil and Iran oil. And guess who follows the Marines? It's the oil companies signing up the concessions and the franchise agreements. So I think our foreign policy is out of control. I agree with Ron Paul on this. I think he's made a heck of a contribution to the otherwise tediously insipid Republican primary debate by saying, what is this about this American empire? Why are we having 700 bases all over the world? There's no more communist Russia. Why would you have an $800 billion military budget that can be applied heavily toward repairing and building America and creating jobs and public works and infrastructure in every community in the country? So it's that's the value, by the way, Kathleen, of debates. And the Democrats are not going to have any debates because there's a one-man primary, President Obama, and he doesn't have to answer to anything. And as a result, the progressive and liberal agenda is totally silent. It's off the screen because there aren't these primary debates on the Democratic side.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about private contractors. We heard a lot about those in Iraq. Are they still pretty active all over the world?
Very much so. And even when they're caught by Pentagon auditors, they still get the contracts renewed. I mean, even the successor to Blackwater, it's been blocked from Iraq, not surprisingly, but they're fishing around for contracts in Afghanistan. And KBR, which was caught with overcharging for meals for the soldiers in Iraq, they're still heavily in the contract. Halliburton, they're heavily in the contract. It's out of control. And, of course, they charge much more than if the same function was performed by the Army, Navy, or Air Force. I mean, I'm a member of the Veterans for Peace, and when I was in the Army, I was quite aware that the Army could feed itself. No, now it farms out the meals to these private contractors who are gouging the Army enormously. And sometimes the food isn't that authentic to begin with. So that's just one small example of many more of how a lot of government and military functions are being contracted out to these private corporations, who then hide behind doctrines that make them very difficult to sue when they produce defective military equipment that kills soldiers, and very difficult to hold accountable because there are so few of them. They're too big to fail. They're too big to punish, and increasingly they're cleverly figuring out a way to be too big to tax.
Ron, thanks for the call. Laura in New Berlin, hi.
Good morning. Like so many of the previous callers, I have the greatest respect for the way Mr. Nader has lived his life. I am wondering what your take is on the environmental assault on laws to protect our air and water by the Congress in the fiscal year 2012 spending bills. As you know, they are slashing funding for the EPA and the Interior Department. The people behind this who intend to profit by undermining environmental protection, do you have thoughts about what their psychology is? Do they believe they will have enough money to somehow not be harmed by environmental degradation?
You know, this is really an amazing situation. The corollary to corporate greed and power is short-sightedness by these companies. I mean, you know, they breathe this air. They may breathe it in shrubbered suburbs, but the idea of, you know, swarming their lobbyists over Congress to weaken the air pollution controls issued by EPA, especially over coal companies, is one of the most degraded spectacles in corporate history. First of all, it's well known that modernizing these electric generating plants produces longer-range profits. They're less often having to pay workers' compensation claims. They're less often prosecuted. They are less often disgraced in their own community. But the short-term aspect of it, driven by a corporatist ideology that affects more than a few members of Congress, has really tied EPA's hands. I mean, the function of EPA is to save lives. The function of EPA is to reduce disease. And their budget is very severely restricted. And I just was meeting with some Democrats on Capitol Hill, the campaign chief for the House, Steve Israel from Long Island, and Congressman John Larson, who's number three in the hierarchy under Nancy Pelosi. And I said to him, you know, look at the Republican record in the House and the intransigence of the Republican minority in the Senate. They have again and again demonstrated they're against the legitimate interests of workers, of patients, of consumers, of small taxpayers. They favor all these corporate tax loopholes. They have again and again demonstrated that they are against, you know, whole legitimate interests of people. Food safety standards, for example, they cut that budget. Auto safety standards, they cut that budget in the House. So if the Republicans are the most craven, greedy, ignorant Republicans in congressional history, why aren't the Democrats landsliding them? That's what I asked the two top Democrats. And I must say, there was a bit of hesitation in their response. So I filled in their response, and I said, you know why you're not landsliding them in the election? It's because you're dialing for the same commercial dollars from the same corporate lobbyists. That's the problem. And that's one of the major changes that is almost never debated. Campaign finance reform, never debated. And I'm not running this year, as you know, Kathleen.
I know.
But I have kept open my website from 2008 with the 17 reform proposals that I think would poll overwhelmingly with the American people. And I've kept that website open as a comparative standard with the impoverished dialogue and debate that now is occurring between the two parties and within the two-party primaries. And that is votenator.org. You can log in. I've held it over 4 years just so you can see what the proposals for campaign finance reform, corporate reform, shift of power to people that make it easy for them to band together as workers and consumers and patients and communities and taxpayers.
Ralph Nader, our guest this hour, his latest book is Getting Steamed to Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. Our phone number, thanks, Laura, for your call, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our email address, you can use that if you'd like, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder, tonight, the New Hampshire primary coverage from National Public Radio will be carried by Wisconsin Public Radio starting at 8 o'clock this evening on the Ideas Network. And looking ahead, this is really, I was reading, going back and forth between Ralph Nader and this biography on Van Gogh all day yesterday, Thursday at 10. It's a fascinating story, Van Gogh's story, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning authors of Jackson Pollock, who did the Van Gogh A Life biography, the ultimate one, joining us on Thursday. Ralph Nader is here now, 800-486-8655. Before we go back to phone calls, I'm wondering in the last couple of years what's happened. You outlined the abuses of Chinese workers by Walmart in this book, and I'm wondering if things have improved. The conditions that were outlined here were quite appalling, Ralph.
they're very appalling. And there was a recent, as you probably know, by Mike Daisy, there was an hour on National Public Radio a few days ago where he went to these factories that produce the iPad and other Apple computer products and described the horrendously bad working conditions. One factory, this is hard to believe, Kathleen, it says one factory is so gigantic in China, producing products for Apple, has 450,000 workers.
Oh!
Each cafeteria has 4,000 seats, and there are 20 of them. You know, the pay is miserable. The turnover, you know, Chinese workers who are poor, they want jobs. The conditions are so bad. The payment of their meager salary is so delayed. The prevention of any independent union. You start talking about an independent union, and as Mike Daisy pointed out, you're on your way to jail in China. That there's almost a 100% turnover of workers. He said 20% a month or so. It was almost, it just, they just keep recruiting and keep recruiting because they're wearing these people out. And in the meantime, you know, Apple is the apple of many Americans' eyes, and
yes,
they think it's a great company. But the dark side of Apple, just like the dark side of LeBron James, the basketball player whose valuable shoes are manufactured in places like Indonesia and Vietnam under horrendous circumstances, the dark side ought to be publicized more.
Of course, of course.
Because it's not just the mistreatment of those workers, it's that when those working conditions are so bad and the pay is so low, it further undermines American workers who are abandoned by corporations in the U.S. to go and exploit these workers in China and make even more money.
Money, 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 more money, more money, more money. When is it enough money? I don't get it. I really don't get the money thing.
Greed is infinite. I think human history shows greed is infinite. It doesn't have any limitations. If someone makes a billion and their friend is making 2 billion, they want to make 2 billion, becomes a race between the billionaires. It's just no end. It's such a degradation of the human spirit, isn't it?
Yes.
When you think of, when you think how little money it would take for the United States to become a humanitarian superpower in the world, on prevention, infectious diseases, showing how drinking water can be cleaned up, millions of kids' lives saved, all these things amount to less than the cost of one aircraft carrier, which is coming in between $12 and $15 billion, and we've got 11 of them, and there's no major enemy in the world for an aircraft carrier to be relevant toward. And the next country that has aircraft carriers is Italy, which has 2, and China is building a small one. And they want to get more money from you, the taxpayer, through Congress, so that these companies can build more aircraft carriers.
Mary in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm so happy to talk to Ralph Nader. You're just a hero of mine, and it's wonderful to be on your show, Joy. I want to address the root problem here that I think is the root problem of corporate power and corporations taking power from we the people by using corporate personhood and money equals speech. Now, this has been true, actually, those two items, corporate personhood and money equals speech, for a long time, actually, and that's why we've been having so many problems with corporations. Citizens United just made things worse in terms of our campaign finances.
Well, the caller just hit the nail on the head. And you know, Kathleen, 20 years ago, the whole issue of corporate personhood it wouldn't even be on the screen. People wouldn't even ask about it in auditoriums. And now more and more people, in fact, they were asked about it in the New Hampshire primary.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my take on it. Corporations are artificial entities. They are created by state governments that give them the charter. Investors do not create corporations. They fund them. And so the state charter comes with certain responsibilities. Unfortunately, the corporations and their lawyers in 1886 in a Supreme Court decision and the notes of it ruled for the first time that the railroad company, a corporation, an artificial entity, had the same rights under the 14th Amendment of our Constitution as real people. And then we're off to the races. So now you have corporations with immense power control over labor, capital, technology, immense privileges and immunities, how to evade taxes and so forth. And they have all the rights that you and I have. And they're not human beings. We're not talking about corporate employees here, just the corporate entity. And so I think the people should rally around this "we the people" preamble. The word corporation is never mentioned in the Constitution. The word company is never mentioned in the Constitution. The word political party is never mentioned in the Constitution. Why are we ruled by them? They should be our servants, not our masters. And so it's a very healthy discussion that's going around the country as people become more and more alert to conclude that unless corporations are subordinated by constitution and statute to the sovereignty of the people, the corporations will continue to be our masters, even though they're global and have no more allegiance to the USA. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mary, very much for the call. Here's a thought you can keep with you for today and beyond, Ralph. It's an email that's come in. I met my wife at your book signing 10 years ago in a Minneapolis bookstore. We celebrate Nader Day each January 21st in a bookstore someplace. Thanks for all your work, and we'll keep up the fight, Steve and Sue.
Isn't that a wonderful story? There's so many wonderful people in the country. They just got to get together. They got to find each other.
We go next to Bill in Windsor. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Ralph.
Good morning.
You need to have a weekly show that every citizen of the United States needs to hear. So put it on the agenda so that we can listen to you once a week. You touched on campaign finance earlier, and I was listening to the 9 o'clock news, and they mentioned how many millions of dollars the candidates were getting into their super PACs. And basically, they're all just for attack ads, and all the anonymous money, attack ads.
Yeah.
My question is the population so stupid that these attack ads are so effective? I mean, what is the antidote to the attack ad is my question.
You put your finger on an important point. I think most people in this country who watch these ads, these attack ads, these highly distorted ads, are not affected by them. But all you need, if you're running for office, and you've got all this money independently supporting you with these ads, is to change the minds of 10 or 15%, and then it becomes a landslide. So let's say you got two candidates and they're running neck and neck, let's say 45-45 in the polls. And if these attacks can change 10% to switch, then it becomes a landslide. The loser is left with 35, the winner is left with 55. And so we have to work on the people who are more vulnerable to these ads and say, why should you believe these ads? First of all, they don't say who funds them. And second, unless they say at the end of the ad, when they try to degrade Social Security or Medicare, or attack Obama or others in a very unfair way. He is very amenable to being criticized, but not in an inaccurate way. Where's the evidence? You see, and if they don't tell you, if they don't give you a website or at the bottom of the ad, you should just disregard the ad. There used to be a famous advertising executive, John O'Toole, who wrote a book, The Trouble with Advertising. He was Nixon's, or Reagan, maybe, his ad advisor. I can't remember which one. And he came to the conclusion, Kathleen, that if an ad is not 5 minutes long, it should be a political ad. It should be prohibited.
Huh.
And I asked him why. I was on the Today Show with him. And I asked him why. He said, because a half a minute ad or a minute ad is inherently deceptive. This is from Madison Avenue executive.
Thank you, Jim, rather Bill, for being with us. Jim in Pleasant Prairie. About a minute left, Jim. Hi.
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity, but I'm afraid we've developed a body politic that has been designed to be bought. And what used to be political parties are now commercial marketing vehicles rather than a party which produced ideas. Not just personalities and looking for celebrity.
Well, that's the diagnosis, and you're right, and it's getting worse, and we now have to move our attention to what we're going to do about it. And there are a lot of good citizen groups with good proposals over the years on how to change the campaign finance, even make it public financing and a voluntary promotion on the 1040 and a certain amount of time on TV and radio for ballot qualified candidates. You can get some of the details on that on the website, votenator.org, which I've held over since 2008, just to provide a comparative framework for evaluating today's presidential races. We can all do it if we, as I say, I know what it takes to change Congress. We've changed it with a few people in the 60s and 70s and 80s over time, but I know what it takes. And 2,000 people organized in every congressional district, like this book, Getting Steamed, describes, can revolutionize the politics in this country so it truly reflects the public sentiment, as Abraham Lincoln pointed out, of the American people for fair play, justice, opportunity, and a real prosperous and environmentally benign political economy. So it's CSRL.org for more details. Wonderful being with you, Kathleen.
Ralph, thank you so much. Wonderful to be with you as always. Thanks.
And thanks, Public Radio.
Ralph Nader, our guest this hour, Getting Steamed, Overcome Corporatism, Build It Together to Win. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. And thanks for all of your calls. His email, his website again is csrl.org for more information. And the book outlines many corporate abuses. We'll be with you tomorrow.